Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing question mark, Millennial Ben. All right, presented by Breaks Plus, it'll be question Nick, and so you teased it. So I got to follow up with a question. So what do you think's the other X factor in them being able to win this Sunday?
Well, I talked about Patrick Surtain, and that was one of the reasons I felt as though he was taken so high in the draft. I mean, he's proven that he is worth his salt. Two interceptions last week, one for 70 yards. And you just look at his skill set. It would be a great matchup with Travis Kelce to take those short intermediate routes away. But I would say as option number one, what I just gave you about PS2 on Travis Kelce, that's option, two. Option one would be keeping PS2 outside the numbers to cover a guy like Tyreek Hill. Then you can still use Kyle Fuller, oddly enough, who's the veteran guy who I thought last week that Vic Fangio will put him outside and Surtain inside, they put Fuller inside. So you can use Fuller. Yes, he's a smaller defender, but I like his quickness against Travis Kelce, which allows whether K-Jack plays or Caden Sterling plays, now you can use your safeties to put a top on the defense. And if you need be, you can drop one of those guys down at the sticks and let them rob those intermediate breaking plays like the dig routes and still be ready to make a play on Patrick Mahomes or Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
I'm glad you're sitting in here this morning, because I want to get your perspective. I understand it could be a bit biased, but who cares? I've heard a lot of argument that from the moment Patrick Surtain was drafted, that, man, you don't take a cornerback that high. That cornerbacks just by themselves are not going to be able to make the kind of individual impact on games that other players at other positions can make, that they can be part of a really good defense, but they're part of a collection of players. And that's where their impact is most felt, not just simply by what they do by themselves. How do you respond to that as somebody who played DB in this league?
Well, for me, it doesn't make sense. I know the idea is that, well, you can always get a corner in the later rounds. D-Mac and I, when I was on a drive with him a couple of weeks ago, I told him this very thing, because his idea was, well, you can go out and get a corner. You could get a guy in the fourth round. I was like, yes, you can, but you're not going to get the guy. And for me, I always lean on this. I've had a chance to coach one of the better corners in the league, and Richard Sherman, and my time with the 49ers, and I got a chance to play with arguably the best corner in the NFL. And yes, I said it in Champ Bailey. And when you have a guy who can turn defense into instant offense, to me, that kind of offsets the idea of, hey, I could have drafted a wide receiver. Hey, I could have drafted a quarterback, because quarterbacks don't win games by themselves. It's a collective team effort. And I also know this. To stop a quarterback, you have to have a great defense to neutralize them, and it starts with guys outside the numbers, because when we talk about quarterbacks, we always talk about the numbers they can put up, the explosive plays. That's why so many people have fallen in love with Tyreek Hill and Patrick Mahomes. But you have to have guys that can man up. Why was it that Peyton Manning was able to go to Super Bowl 50 and actually win Super Bowl 50? Why? Why did that happen?
Well, the argument would be he had a great defense, a great collection of defensive players. But if you take those guys individually, how much can you measure the individual impact of those players? See, here's the problem. Because we live in a time right now as football fans. It's all about fantasy football. It's about numbers. It's about stats. It's about stuff that we can easily see. Quarterback throws for this many yards. Quarterback throws for this many touchdowns. Receiver has this many catches. Running back has this many carries and yards. But with a cornerback, unless he's returning a pick six to the house, it's not as easy to measure that guy's individual impact, which leads people to think that a Patrick Surtain is, well, during the course of a game and the defense is out there for 65 plays, for example, what kind of individual impact is he making? How do we measure it?
The way you measure it is by you're looking at the guys that he's covering, right? If he's taking those guys, let's just say, out as an option. Now, this is the NFL. Guys are still going to catch passes. But if I'm eliminating your explosive plays, I'm taking you off being the first option, there is my value because now it allows the defensive coordinator to utilize his other weapons in different ways. But also, you are flipping the field for your offense, right? You're turning the ball over. In the case of Patrick Surtain, what we've seen from him is that, once again, defense turning to instant offense, whether he does it himself, whether he intercepts the ball, he sets Teddy Bridgewater and Pat Shermer's offense up at a good position where they can actually get 7 points or McManus can kick a field goal. However that is, that's the way that you can impact the game. But we've fallen in love so much with the quarterback position that we don't talk about other guys. Once again, looking at the no-fly zone. If Bradley Roby doesn't make a couple of plays, Chris Harris doesn't make a couple of plays, it changes the impact of a football game. You're not giving Peyton Manning the ball on the short side of the field. Let him score. He gets all the praise. No, everyone's forgot about what happened. Or a strip force fumble. Von Miller coming around the edge. No one really talks about that because we talk about the offense so much. But having a guy like PS2 on your team, it allows you to do different things that we couldn't do before. Like, we just played a vignette. We talked about the snow game, right? I mean, the luxury of having a corner that can go out there and hold their own. And I'm not saying that PS2 is going to shut down Tyreek Hill. I watched that cheetah twice, coaching for the 49ers. You're not going to shut him down. The whole idea is you want to limit his explosive plays because now it gives you an opportunity as an offense. But this is where we measure how good a corner is. When Mike Shanahan traded Clint Porter to Washington for Champ Bailey, blockbuster deal,
yep.
Right?
Clint Porter, by the way, in 2 years had rushed for 3,000 yards.
Exactly. It's just like, wait a minute. That's a key to the success of the passing game, running the football. And you're going to give that away for a corner? It's like, nah, that's not going to work. That is nonsensical. But when Champ came in, it changed our defense because it solidified us on the corner. And it gave us so much confidence as far as what John and I can actually do. We didn't have to worry about one half of the field. So if we're playing against LaDainian Tomlinson and then San Diego Chargers, we can be fast acting in the run game because he's going to hold it down in the back end. That is what PS2 actually gives the Broncos defensively. You mix in Ronald Darby with that, Kyle Fuller, the personnel is there. Now this is one of the biggest challenges for this defense and this team. Can you go out there? Don't think about the 11 straight losses. Can you go out there and say, well, this is a brand new game, flex schedule. Everyone's going to get a chance to see what we can do defensively.
I'm glad you brought up Shanahan trading Clinton Porters for Champ Bailey because that to me is, that's my fallback position that I'll bring up to the D-Max and everyone else in the world who says, well, you know, what impact can a corner really make? Well, apparently they can make enough when somebody like Mike Shanahan decides that it's more than okay to trade a running back who's just put up 3,000 yards in his first 2 years to trade for a corner. Clearly he, and all due respect to my man D-Mac, we'll talk on Sunday, I'm going to probably take Mike Shanahan's view on football a little bit more than his. I think that speaks to the legitimacy of how coaches view the individual impact of what a corner can do. But let me go one step further with it. If Patrick Surtain is truly going to be this pick that we'll all look back on as being just a brilliant, brilliant pick by George Payton as his first pick, to me it's not about shutting down the elite wide receivers in the game. It's being a Travis Kelce stopper. You look at one of the few identifiable trends that have come out of all of these games against the Chiefs. They have no answer for Travis Kelce. None. So what about the idea that Patrick Surtain, his success as a slam dunk pick will be measured by his ability in the years to come to check these all-world tight ends.
Well, that all depends, Mike.
Should he be able to do it?
Yeah, I would say based on his height.
Is that why he was drafted?
Because if
George Payton, he won't come out and admit it yet, but if George Payton in a private moment wants to say, look, here's why I spent the 9th overall pick on a pick where everybody else was saying take a quarterback or take Micah Parsons, here's why I believe we drafted a guy that moving forward for the next decade can contain all these mismatch nightmare tight ends in the NFL, then it was absolutely worth it. Where they took him. Well, if he can be that guy.
Can he
be that guy?
Yeah, he can be that guy, but understand this is it's not just going to be every time you face a team that has an elite tight end, you're going to put Pat Surtain on him as the kind of tight end killer, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It is, he allows you to do that if you wanted to do that, but he also can be put on another wide receiver that allows you to use a linebacker or maybe a nickel or a safety to help and cover those guys. Because the problem was for the Broncos, you have an issue with Travis Kelce. Then you had an issue with the quarterback. Then you have an issue with Tyreek Hill. And you're like, well, we don't have enough players with the skill set to keep all those guys on lock. So we get one guy that gives us multiple options that we can use for probably less skilled players to take them out of the game. So when we look at Patrick Surtain, he's not going to be a guy that you constantly put on Darren Waller, constantly put on Travis Kelce. You use him to take away that receiver, which now allows you defensively to take away Travis Kelce in ways that you couldn't do before.
All right, well, then however it gets done, if over the next 10 years the Broncos are playing these tight ends who are wrecking everybody else and they make a minimal impact against the Broncos, and I can talk to guys like you who say it is clear why they are containing these tight ends. It's because they're putting Patrick Surtain on them one-on-one, or he is taking away one half of the football field so much that it's allowing the Broncos to throw all these other assets at these tight ends to neutralize them. If that's what happens over the next 10 years, then this pick was absolutely worth it.
Right, and also
after watching the Kelces and the Kittles and the Wallers of the world just murder the Broncos every single week, if all of a sudden that trend changes and we could point it to the arrival of Patrick Surtain as the chief reason why, pardon the pun, then absolutely it was worth its weight in gold.
Absolutely.
To make that kind of a pick.
And consider this too.
But that's
well.
What has to happen.
Well, it can actually happen because look at what's changed also with the Broncos on the second level of their defense. There's no Josie Jewell or Alexander Johnson, right? Those are the guys who I would dare to say would be liabilities in the passing game, right? Now you have Kenny Young and Baron Browning, two guys who are very athletic that you did not have before. And I go back to Vic Fangio's history as a defensive coordinator. Patrick Willis with the San Francisco 49ers, Danny Trevathan, right? He had, you know, those linebackers in Chicago to utilize to help take some of those short intermediate passes, but also think about what we're seeing with Travis Kelce. Kelce's used entirely different than the Las Vegas Raiders used Darren Waller. They put Waller outside the numbers a lot and run on vertical routes. When we see Kelce doing his damage, it is those short kind of look jerk routes, maybe 5 yards here, 8 yards here. So now it's understanding your drop angles, where you need to drop, where you need to be, and where your eyes need to be. So the biggest issues I've seen with the Broncos in covering the tight ends, guys like Travis Kelce, they didn't have the athleticism of the linebacker position, and they don't talk. You have to communicate because if you study the Chiefs' offense, they give you a little hint of what they might do. When Travis Kelce's off the ball, Mike, why is he off the ball? He's not a huge threat in the passing game vertically if he's off the ball. So I'm thinking tight end screens, wham plays where he's trying to insert for the run game, a shovel pass here and there, or he's trying to come right back across the field. You have to communicate when you play a team like this, but the Broncos, the Bills, the Buccaneers did a great job of communicating. That's how you stop this. But if you don't practice it and you don't coach it, how do you expect for it to work in games?
What about the idea that when you have a team that you play twice a year and you become familiar with their personnel, in what ways does that help? In what ways is it a disadvantage when you're going up against Mahomes twice a year? Are there more advantages than you may think in terms of, hey, we go up against this guy twice a year and we've got a better book on him and Kelsey and Hill than most other teams do. And that gives the Broncos, because one thing you can look at with the Broncos during this streak that drives everybody crazy, but by and large, the Chiefs have put up less than what they were averaging that season when they played the Broncos. The Broncos didn't win, but a lot of times they held them below their season average. So is there something to the idea that playing a team twice a year helps in these cases?
I say no, because it's a flawed theory, because you think because you face them so often, you have the book out on them. But when we watch a lot of games, the execution isn't there, because you're like, okay, well, when they get in this formation, they're going to run this. And sometimes you're wrong, because you are basing it off of something you've seen before. But the other coach, he understands this. Andy Reid understands this. You show them one thing and you change it up. I mean, you look at Mike Shanahan and all the disciples off his coaching tree. They all do the same things. They use one formation, one run play to set up something that they're going to run maybe in the third or fourth quarter. So you're thinking, oh, we've seen this formation before, so we know exactly what they're going to run. And nope, guess what? They have built another play off of that. So for me, it's all about making in-game adjustments. Yes, you take in the idea, Mike, that I've played this team before. Here's what they like to do with their personnel, right? But you have to figure that teams are going to adjust and they're going to adapt. So you have to have the ability to do the same thing. Now, you want to match personnel with personnel, but you can't constantly think that they're going to continue to run the same identical formations.
But then let me try to bring some evidence, some facts to the argument. The Broncos have gone up against Mahomes 6 times. I'm not going to count the one at the end of that regular season, which was his first exposure to the rivalry. It was at the end of the year and the Chiefs had already clinched and the Broncos were going nowhere. And so I'm not going to count that game. I'm going to start in 2018, okay? 5 games he's played against the Broncos. Remember, he got hurt early in that game in which Matt Moore came in, so I won't count that one either. But in those 5 full games that he has played against the Broncos starting in 2018, he's had one game where you would say, you know, he was truly, truly dominant, that he gave to the Broncos what we've seen him give to so many teams around the league. In 2018, the second meeting, the Chiefs won. He was 24 of 34 for 303 yards and 4 touchdowns. Okay? The other games, 28 of 45, 300 yards, 1 touchdown, no picks. Another game, 27 of 34, 340 yards. High completion percentage, a lot of yards, but he only threw 2 touchdowns and had a pick in a game in which the Chiefs only scored 23 points. And then 15 of 23 for 200 yards, 1 touchdown, no picks. And then 25 of 40 for 318 yards, 1 touchdown, no picks. Look, the numbers are still good, okay? But they haven't been against the Broncos like the numbers that we've seen against the rest of the NFL.
Well, that's because...
So, why is that? Why have they done a decent job in keeping him from going nuts?
Because it comes down, from a defensive standpoint, either defending certain areas based on field position or the personnel itself. Like, the personnel isn't going to change. It's the scheme that changes that makes it really difficult for a lot of teams to be able to slow down that of the Chiefs. And Vic Fangio has done a great job. And I'm not going to say that he's kind of figured out the enigma or the Rubik's Cube that is the Chiefs offense, but he's been able in spots to get pressure, to put pressure on Patrick Mahomes. And we know that's the greatest neutralizer of any quarterback. I don't care who you are. So for me, the simple recipe, but you have to actually go out and do it, is creating pressure and disguising your coverages. And usually when you disguise your coverages, Mike, you think, okay, well, we're going to show the quarterback something he's never seen before. In this case, you're not going to shock and surprise Mahomes. What you're trying to do is that you're trying to make it difficult on the wide receivers running the routes, making them guess as they're running a route. And what we've seen from the Broncos playing this kind of zone match coverage defense from Vic Fangio is that they show the quarterback pre-snap what they're actually in. So you're taking all the hard part away from me as a quarterback. To me, roll up your guys on coverage. If you're going to draw back in zone, make those receivers and make, you know, Tyreek Hill think, is this man or is this zone? And as fast as he is, we just want to slow him down maybe a second or two.
Yeah, so for the guy who says, the texter says, Evans, really, cherry-picking games to make your point. Seriously? How am I cherry-picking games? I just took five. He's played six games against the Broncos where he was the starting quarterback of the Chiefs. Okay, one of them he was hurt early in the game. In those other five, okay, five games. I'm not cherry picking. I'm taking five games. If you take out the one game, I'm taking out one game out of that. Still, these four games against the Broncos, where in those four games he combined to throw five touchdowns and two picks, and in two of the games he had a completion percentage that was only slightly above 50%. Now, look, I'm not here to tell you that, hey, see, I told you the Broncos have the answer to stop Patrick Mahomes. I'm just saying that as compared to most teams in the league, they have done a better job, by and large, against Mahomes than most teams in this league can claim. And I think it gives them a fighting chance on Sunday. And it's really why, when you look at the whole 11-game losing streak and why we're in this mess, and we've played these vignettes throughout the course of the week to kind of highlight or lowlight what's happened over these 11 games. It really hasn't been just the overwhelming crush of Mahomes in this unstoppable Chiefs offense. It really hasn't. It's just been terrible, terrible offensive play, terrible quarterbacking, terrible play calling. And terrible personnel moves made by John Elway's and his front office.
This is really my fault.
It has. If there's one, if you're looking for the common denominator through these 11 games, it hasn't been, oh my God, we got no answer for Mahomes. It truly hasn't.
But this is why Vic Fangio, early in the week, he was just saying, hey, listen, we definitely have a great chance to win because we have better personnel defensively. And keep this in mind too as well. I don't know if he was alluding to this, but I'll just add it into the equation. I mean, I don't care what you think about, you know, Teddy Bridgewater, and everyone has their own opinions, but I go back to last year when the Carolina Panthers, with a much maligned offensive line, tight end group that wasn't that great, the score ended up being 31-33 in favor of the Chiefs. And Teddy finished that game 36 of 49, 310 yards, and two touchdowns. So when you say, well, what's been the problem? Penalties killing the Broncos, lack of creativity from an offensive standpoint. The defense has been there. So this is why I'm giving the Broncos an opportunity, because there's Teddy and not Drew Locke. And that offensive play and consistency could be the difference why the Broncos finally get that monkey off their back.
You're minus 18 in turnovers in this 11-game losing streak. Offense has been terrible. Terrible. Okay? So, get a better offensive showing. I'm pretty confident the defense is going to keep them in this game. What do you do, offense? All right, coming up next, we'll mercifully finish off these 11 straight with number 11. And we'll hear from Zach Bye, who shares with us what he's got in this week's Mile High Hoops podcast. That's coming up next, Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com. HMotors.com.
All right. We'll have Zach Bye join us in just a second.
I want to pound his ass.
Sure. Nick Ferguson, I've been doing a great job sending in for Stink, who's in Chicago, calling or prepping. He's at the Bears facility. Hallis Hall. Get ready to call. Do you play for Chicago?
People know me.
Yes, for a short period of time.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
How many different teams did you play for?
Ooh, wow. Maybe four?
Okay.
Four?
So you know what it's like inside Hallis Hall, right?
Yeah, I know.
A ton of history there?
Yeah, George Payton was there when I was there.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
That's right. He still has the scouting report on you.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for filling in. Throughout the week, we've been playing the lowlights, the agonizing recaps of the Broncos' 11 straight losses. Some of you have not like them. You get mad. You don't want to be reminded of what's happened. I and others choose to look at it differently. I think we got to face it head on. In order to fix your problem, admit you have a problem. And boy, these vignettes that we've played throughout the course of the week have really helped bring to the surface all the things that have plagued this team over the last 5 years. And quite frankly, it annoys me. And it makes me want to demand accountability even more and call people on the carpet and really, you know, point the finger. I'm not interested in pulling the thumb. Right now, I just want these vignettes make me want to point the finger and say, what the heck have you been doing around here? And why was it allowed to go unchecked? Why wasn't there more accountability?
I'm not sure.
And how do we go about fixing it? That's how I choose to look at it. Here's the last one.
December 6th, 2020. Sunday Night Football at Arrowhead. The Broncos' 11th straight loss to the Chiefs. Concluded with two of the ugliest words in sports. Moral victory. Behind a big game from Melvin Gordon, Vic Fangio's Broncos actually hung in against the Chiefs, even taking a lead in the second half.
All in, but out of bounds by Tim Patrick. Now they're going to call it a touchdown.
Two, he has it.
Touchdown.
After Patrick Mahomes retook the lead, Drew Lock had the ball in his hands in his hometown of Kansas City with a chance to finally end Broncos country's misery and snap the streak.
Over the middle, and then we intercepted, and that's going to wrap it up. So, Tyrann Mathieu does it again.
With the defeat, the Broncos' losing streak to Kansas City now spans 11 games, 3 head coaches, and 6 quarterbacks. Does the streak end Sunday night? It's the biggest game since Super Bowl 50. Broncos, Chiefs, Arrowhead this Sunday.
I mean, that's it right there, isn't it? A losing streak that has spanned 3 head coaches. How many coordinators? How many quarterbacks? Meanwhile, the Chiefs have been a testament to consistency. Same coach. Same quarterback. Same core players. Meanwhile, the Broncos have just been a revolving door of chaos. I'm glad we've done this week. Because it really, truly has shown a light on just how poorly run, managed, coached this franchise has been. I think it's great. Because now we know how to go about fixing it. Well, that's the other thing, too, is that the reason I haven't been freaked out by listening to these things over the week, I know it's not going to last forever. This will change, okay? The Broncos will have their moment in the sun again, and they will get over on the Chiefs again. It will happen. So I'm not freaked out by that. I don't look at what I've been listening to this week as like, well, you know, in 10 years, we're going to be doing this again. And when the streak's at 30 or something, it's not going to happen. So I choose, rather than to wallow in this, to look at this as a reason for let's change this. And hopefully we're in the process of doing that.
Well, let's dive into this whole idea of let's change this. What does that mean? Because you just said, well, when we look at Kansas City, same head coach, same GM, same quarterback, same personnel, the level of consistency. And all these vignettes, it's been different quarterbacks, different offensive coordinators, and things looked a little different. So what does that mean, changing, Mike? Are we looking to change more coordinators and head coaches to add to more vignettes of the changes that have taken
place?
Fair point.
Does all this change mean that more change is the right way to go? Yes.
Yeah, okay.
In this case, yes. And then I'm confident that once this last bit of change happens, that we have new general manager, new front office, new owner that will change the direction that this thing has been going in the last 5 years. And we'll look at this as the time that it actually changed. Yeah, I do feel that way.
I'm not a fan of that. Because not change is not always great.
I agree with that. But come on. Wait, hold on. I'll get to Zach in a second here. Are you saying the best course of action for the Broncos is to maintain the status quo in the coaching staff?
As crazy as it seems.
How about new?
Everything that we've heard. Yes, but that person.
Good. Get out of here.
That person being the kind of linchpin to stay.
Uh huh.
That could be Vic Fangio. Maybe not Pat Shurmur. It could be.
Oh, we have
Fangio,
got.
Not Shurmur.
I'm not done with you yet, but I'm going to bring in Zach Bye. New proud papa, Zach Bye. Hey, congratulations. Haven't had a chance to. I know we've texted back and forth, but congratulations on the birth of your second child, Mia Ray Bye. I believe I got that right.
Yeah, Mia Ray Bye. 333, 9 total letters in her name. I'm on full daddy duty right now. I got the 3-year-old. Really, with the arrival of baby number 2, and I didn't quite realize this, it's not about the newborn. It's about managing the 3-year-old in addition to the newborn. So we are figuring it out. I actually came back to work this week after having the baby on Friday because we've had help this week, but the help is going home today. So now is the real test of what you two guys have already experienced.
Yeah, you got this, but yeah, you definitely need to, you need to narrow your focus, okay? You cannot get caught looking too far ahead. You have got to stay in the moment, my friend. Just stay in the moment.
Yeah, it's been interesting, man, trying to figure this out with these two. Two nights ago, we had, the first ever bi family projectile diarrhea.
Nice.
So we have not had that with our first, and I felt left out. I've heard about these projectile moments. I've heard about these, and I felt left out, but we got our first one done, sheets and bed and everything in the washing machine.
Awesome.
So I feel like I've arrived.
Yep, you've arrived. All right, you did your Mile High Hoops podcast. Where are you at with the Nuggets after a inspiring win in Miami, followed by a less than inspiring loss in Orlando?
Yeah, these were the losses on Wednesday night that were really a large part of the makeup of the 2018-2019 team. I thought that they got these type of losses out of their system, even considering how banged up the Nuggets are. Monte Morris played, the MVP of the league played, Will Barton played, $100 million Aaron Gordon played. Like, they had enough horses to win. They were up 16 at halftime. Very disappointing, very immature, lack of focus, lack of defense. The Magic shot their season high from the field. They scored 66 points in the paint. If that roster scores 66 points in the paint, it's really all you need to know They dropped their hands in the middle of a fight, and they got punched in their face and lost. So very disappointing following the win in Miami. So we'll see if they can make up for it in New York and Chicago.
Well, Zach, that's really interesting because when you look at the Bulls played the Knicks, and the Knicks were down 21 points, but they showed that resilience that New Yorkers have to kind of fight back. And known as though the Nuggets just lost a game against Orlando, a team that we all felt as though they're going to walk into that arena and just step on their throats, they were not able to accomplish that because when you look at the second half, especially the fourth quarter, you get outscored 27-20, and you're facing a Knicks team that's coming off a loss to Chicago, a team that you still have to play on this seven-game road trip. How do you think that that's going to affect the Nuggets players and the approach of Michael Malone?
Well, you know, I'm not sure if, you know, what happened with the Knicks really affects the Nuggets. The Nuggets are on their own journey, and they got to figure this thing out. But I will say this. Although, you know, once in a while the Nuggets will do this, they don't let you down as much as, say, like the Broncos. But every time that they feel like the chips are down and their back is against the wall, this team has a unique characteristic of rising out of the ashes like a phoenix. Every single time it feels like they're done. And that's not to say that the loss in Orlando feels like their season's done. But, you know, you're down on them, and they always seem to redeem themselves rather quickly. They've done that for about three seasons now. So I'm expecting them to come out and really put up an incredible effort against the New York Knicks tomorrow in a matinee in Madison Square Garden. That game's going to start at 11 a.m., believe it or not. So as long as Nikola Jokic is playing, it feels like all things are possible. I trust their DNA. I trust their culture. Although Wednesday night was a eyesore of a loss, I'm expecting them to win either that game against the Knicks or the follow-up against a really, really talented Chicago Bulls team who came into Denver 2 weeks ago and won on a Friday night.
Text of the day just came in. Is it just me? I thought without Stink on the show today, we would avoid poop entering the conversation. Thanks, Zach.
Yeah, it was yellow.
Awesome.
Well, fantastic. See you later.
Fantastic. See you later. Good luck this weekend, Zach.
Hey, thanks a lot. The Mile High Hoops podcast available on denverfan.com or wherever you get your podcast.
There you go. All right, Zach, bye.
Good. Get out of here.
By the way, same thing. You can get the Mile High Hockey podcast that I've been hosting to start the season. Very proud of that. You can check that out. Same ways that you can check out the Mile High Hoops podcast. Check it out, and, of course, would love your feedback. Coming up next, we've arrived at that moment. Is this the week the Broncos end the streak? Our predictions coming up next. Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan. With Nick Ferguson staying in. Been doing a great job. Before we get to our predictions, there's something you want to bring to everyone's attention about what you're going to be doing this weekend.
Well, usually I spend my Saturdays watching college football, but it's going to be more emphasis this week because I have a Heisman vote, and there are a couple of guys who are, you know, one guy in particular, Kenny Prickett, who's on maybe the Broncos' watch list from a quarterback standpoint. He's in the ACC championship against yep. Wake Forest. So I want to see how well he's going to perform. And there are other guys as well, C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young. Kenneth Walker, the third, he's not playing in the conference game, but these are some of the guys who I've watched all season long.
No defensive players? What about Hutchinson from Michigan?
Well, you always...
Dude was a beast last week.
You always throw a defensive guy in it, but let's be totally honest, this is kind of an offensive award, and predominantly it always goes to the quarterback. There's been occasional surprises over the year, but once again, this is why I always wait to these conference games, if a guy gets in the conference game, to see how they perform. Because it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And it's that lasting impression. So I'm going to be watching a lot of college football this weekend to see which guy gets my vote.
Yeah, I think we talked about this once before. How in the world did you get a Heisman vote?
Well, they came and sought me out. So
really?
Yes, and when the question was asked of me, and I was thinking, okay, well, if someone's asking you, do you want to vote for a Heisman, it's just like, hey, do you want $1 million? The answer to that question is really quick. Yes, I want to do it. And listen, Mike, I'm watching college football anyway. So now the Heisman, you know, having a Heisman vote forces me to watch more intently.
Mm-hmm.
So I get so it actually helps me out in two ways. I get to watch college football more, and I don't have to do the honey-do list.
Well, that's a good point. I don't have a Heisman vote, but I've been watching a lot of college football this year for reasons far different than the responsibility of having a Heisman vote. Take that where you will. So how many people have Heisman votes, by the way?
Well, there's a great number that are kind of spread out.
I know it's more than a lot more than, let's say, the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yes.
But that doesn't diminish the fact you've got a Heisman vote.
Yeah,
how many are there?
You get a chance to really vote. I think if I understand correctly, it may be a little over 600 people who may vote.
All right, so 600 people on this planet get a chance to vote for the Heisman. You're one of them.
Yes.
That's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, it's totally awesome. My son is more really hyped about me having a Heisman vote than me playing almost a decade in NFL.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
I think your cool factor just went up.
It just went up.
More knowing that you have a Heisman vote than you being responsible for the Tom Brady pick that Champ Bailey returned.
Yes, exactly.
Right. See how I did that? All right, let's do it.
Prediction? Yes, prediction.
Hey. The dreaded stinks!
Hey, woman!
All right, it is time. The Denver Broncos pick of the week. Presented by King Soopers, the official grocery sponsor of your Denver Broncos. You are a gracious guest. You go first.
Well, I am going to go with the Broncos on this one. And the reason I'm going with the Broncos, I go back to that last year victory, 31-33, Teddy Bridgewater in Carolina. They utilized Christian McCaffrey a lot out of the backfield, throwing it to him. And I saw evidence of it during the San Diego game. I mean, it's San Diego.
The
Chargers.
Stink does it all the time.
With the Chargers getting Javonte Williams involved, not just by handing it off to him, Mike, but just kind of throwing it to him out of the backfield. So it just seemed as though Pat Shurmur has, over the bye week, has had this revelation, I need to do something different, utilizing my running backs. And just the personnel here on defensively, there's no way that, for me, I feel as the Broncos have any, if they had a chance, this is the best chance they've had in 11 tries to dethrone the Kansas City Chiefs. So I'm rolling with the Broncos.
Whoa! Picking the Broncos to win.
I am picking the Broncos to win.
Wow.
Yeah, I said it.
You know, honestly, I did not start this day with the idea of getting a full Ferguson-type bold prediction out of you. I didn't even try. And you did it yourself. You got the Broncos winning what? Score?
24-21.
Move aside, 12-4. We got ourselves a new full Ferguson.
Yes.
24-21. All right. I'm partway down the road with you. First of all, I don't completely buy the Chiefs yet.
Okay.
I don't. They've just been too up and down defensively and offensively this year to think that they're just going to show up and hammer the Broncos. I think the Broncos will show well defensively. I do think whatever faults you may have with Vic Fangio as a head coach, I do think he is a very good defensive coordinator. And I do think the Broncos have shown they're a better defense without Von Miller. So I think they're going to show pretty well defensively. Offensively, I agree with you. I do think that maybe, just maybe, it's getting through Pat Shurmur's rather
big head.
Here you go. That his two best offensive players are Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams. Use them in the passing game. And I think the Broncos keep it close. And honestly, I'm okay with, and I'm prepared with coming on Monday and talking about a good loss. Because here's why. As you may know by now, the Broncos have lost 11 straight to the Chiefs.
Yes.
There has been a Grand Canyon size gap between these two teams. I just don't see how realistically you can think just in one trip to Arrowhead on a Sunday night that you're going to jump the Grand Canyon, Evel Knievel style. Or was that the Snake River? I'm not sure. You get my point. It's too much of a gap to just all of a sudden wipe out in one fell swoop. But you can do enough to come out of this game on Sunday night feeling like, you know what? The gap is closing a little bit. And then that leaves you with the opportunity to close the gap all the way by beating them in the last game of the season. I believe the only way that Vic Fangio holds on to his job is if he wins 10 games, makes the playoffs, and one of those wins coming down the stretch has to include a win over the Chiefs. I don't think they win Sunday. That sets up a scenario where they'll have to win four of their next five to close out the season. There's no way this team's going to win four in a row. They're not. The last time they won four in a row was literally the first four games of the 2016 season, the year after they won the Super Bowl. Since that time, they've had one three-game winning streak and a couple of two-game winning streaks dotted in there. The idea that this team that we've watched over the last handful of years is suddenly going to lose on Sunday and rip off four in a row ain't happening. Can they win three out of the next four? Sure. And then that would leave that last game against Kansas City here at home. Win that. Go into that game with nine wins, beat Kansas City to get to 10 and get in the playoffs. I'm okay with Vic Fangio coming back.
I'll take it.
But do you agree with me? 10 wins, playoffs, and one of those wins have to be against the Chiefs.
Absolutely.
Okay. Then we're in agreement. Hey, great job. Thank you so much for filling in.
Hey, appreciate it.
Enjoy you watching your college football this weekend.
I will do so.
Everybody have a great weekend. I'm going to go with the Chiefs. Benny's like, I need a score. All right, I'm going to go Chiefs 24, Broncos 17. With a late Kansas City score to win the game.
Not too far off.
Nope. Not too far off, except you're picking the Broncos to win.
Yes, I am.
All right. And last thing, folks, for all of you who have been just angry with us for playing the lowlights of the 11-game loser, I promise you, if they win on Sunday, you will hear some of the most glorious highlight packages on Monday. Millennial Ben will put some of the greatest highlight packages together for you to enjoy on a you can record it and play it on a repeating loop to make up for this week. How about that? Okay, Chad and Nate coming up next. Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.